Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/Wondery and use code Wondery for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/Wondery. Code Wondery.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Welcome to the Nerdist Podcast number 266. I have no voice left. I am so sorry. I went to the Walking Dead premiere last night. I know. Spoiled nerd. Anyway, it was so fucking unbelievable. Am I going to spoil anything? But it was well worth the wait. People were freaking out afterwards. There was a sort of after party where they built this kind of prison set, but it was really loud, and so the whole night was just, "This was really great, wasn't it?" And then went through the Walking Dead maze at Universal, and there's just a lot of screaming there. God damn, every time you think, okay, I see where the zombie's gonna jump out of the wall, they come from like your peripheral vision, and then you can't help but like, "Nah!" So, no voice today. Should be interesting because I'm podcasting Lauren Cohan later in the day. But you should come see us perform at New York Comic Con on Friday, October 12th. Tig Notaro is gonna be our guest. I believe Mr. Joel Hodgson will be there as well. So tickets for that, if you go to nerdist.com/calendar, you can get a link there. So that's October 12th. And then I'm going to be doing stand-up on the road at Zany's in Nashville in early December, I think the 6th or the 9th. You can go to nerdist.com and we'll put up the ticket information for that as well. And I'll be doing a bunch of shows all over the place. I would like to thank audible.com for sponsoring this episode of the Nerdist Podcast, simply because audible.com has every damn book you could ever possibly want to listen to. And I'm a huge, I have been listening to audiobooks for years. Even like in the old days where you had like a giant, one of those weird, almost like trapper keeper folders of tapes. It's just, I'm an on the go guy. I'm not ashamed of it. It's okay. I don't always have time. You can't hold a book up while you're driving in your car, particularly in Los Angeles. They don't appreciate that. If you can't text on your phone, you sure can't read a fucking book. So, audiobooks, great way to go. I haven't listened to it yet, but, Matt Myra recommended My Mother Was Nuts, a memoir by Penny Marshall, because she reads it, and I totally want to hear Penny Marshall's voice reading, and then My Mother Was Crazy, and then Laverne and Shirley, and then I directed Big. I love Penny Marshall so much, so I'm probably going to, that's the next book I'm going to get, is My Mother Was Nuts, a memoir on audible.com, but there's over 100,000 titles to choose from, every genre you could possibly want, so visit audible.com/nerdist to get your free audiobook download today. This episode of the Nerdist Podcast is Joe Casey. Joe Casey is one of the founders of Man of Action Studios, which is basically like a comic creative collective, but they don't just make comics. There's television. They make a ton. It really is just like a creative bubble of dudes who all worked for big companies and then kind of pulled away and then formed their own thing. And so he's a super interesting guy, has a lot of great advice, you know, particularly if you want to get into comics. But, you know, if you're not that much of a comic fan, I feel like there's still enough in this episode that you're not going to feel lost or bored. So super great guy, Joe Casey. And here we go. The Nerdist episode number 266. Nerdist Podcast. I don't have a voice. I sound like R. Lee Ermey. You gonna go over there with Mary Jane Rotten Crotch? Oh, you just shot yourself in the face, Vincent D'Onofrio. Spoiler alert, if you haven't seen Full Metal Jacket.
Now entering Nerdist.com.
You're going to go right here.
And this will be your volume. Right over here.
This one or
yeah,
this one?
This one. Okay. There's
let me childishly say, jam it in that hole. Can you hear yourself?
You want a little hotter?
Yeah, I can't hear anything.
No?
Huh?
Anything?
No, nothing?
There's a controller over there?
No. This would be it. Let's try over here. This might be a little... Make sure that's not going to blow your eardrums out.
How about now?
Nope.
Still nothing.
Really?
You're not doing it right, Chris.
Oh, well. You don't get headphones, I guess.
Really?
I don't know. I mean, you know...
Let me try this one.
Yeah, go for it.
This equipment is basically just... that has some sort of a half-life that I'm not sure. Anything?
Nothing.
I don't know then.
3,000 years, like a proton pack?
Yeah. sorry about that.
That's all right.
Joe Casey of Man of Action Studios. Yeah. Jonah Ray is on his way back down from a vending machine to get us water because G4 is dark this week and we can't pilfer their H2O supplies. I apologize. That is not how a guest deserves to be treated.
I'm embarrassed.
I know,
was it
I feel
like
bad.
This when you did Smodcast? Was this what it was like?
Except it was in Kevin's house.
Yeah.
We didn't have any water there either.
Actually, Chris lives here.
This is my house. Welcome.
Yeah. When do we get to play It's a Small World? A Small World, because there's a lot of small world things going on.
I keep all those kids locked up.
No. Not that kind of game. But like,
oh.
The fact that...
I just got a phone with Mosier.
Yeah, I work with Mosier.
And Joe works with Mosier on
the
Spider-Man.
And then I've known Kirkman for like too many years.
Well, why did I bring all these Dutch kids then?
I don't know.
If you weren't talking about the ride.
But that's not the best one.
What?
Now, you grew up in Memphis, right?
I did.
What years did you live there?
I was there, let's see. Well, my childhood travel is spotty. I was born in Louisville, Kentucky. I only lived there for a couple years. Then we lived in Florida for a couple years, because that's where my mom was from. Then we moved to Memphis. So from, you know, early elementary school up until high school, I was in Memphis.
Right.
Which in my head feels like a very long time, but now... I'm like, well, it really was probably only about 7 years.
But this would be the 80s, maybe?
This would have been the 1980s.
The 1980s.
And you are from Memphis?
Well, I lived in Memphis I had grandparents that lived there, so I visited there like 3 times a year.
Yeah.
And I lived there, went to Memphis State when it was called Memphis State.
Oh, you mean the University of Memphis, because that sounds fancier.
Yes, much better now.
Yeah, U of M.
Yes. So I lived there for 5 years, which is not to say I went to college for 5 years.
No, I did.
College for about 3.5 years,
yep.
And then decided, nah. But I was curious because now your dad owned a bowling alley.
Still
right?
Has it there. They just had their 30th anniversary.
Now, which bowling alley?
All-Star Lanes.
Where is it?
Quince and White Station.
Quince? And wait a minute. Wait.
Yeah.
Quince and White Station.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, so this is good.
Set your brain on Google Maps.
Well, this is right around the corner from
street
a street
view.
Called Helena, right?
Maybe.
Okay, I had it. My aunt and uncle lived on that street. Is
okay.
It right next to the barbecue joint?
Yes, Three Little Pigs.
There you go.
Mm-hmm.
So I've been there.
Still
many
there
times.
Too.
Yes,
that place has been there as long as my dad's bowling center has been there.
Yes, and not only that, I took bowling in college as a sports elective.
Oh, you son of a bitch!
And that's where they sent us to take.
You mean
the
it's
class.
Not a thing? It's
you
a thing.
You can't do that.
You can.
Yes,
sports elective. You're gonna go bowl.
What? Oh. What else are you gonna do? Shot put?
Pole
come on.
Vault.
Fuck
bowling.
That. You get it's air conditioning. You get to go inside.
It was fantastic.
Bowling's fun.
Jonah, let me catch you up. Your credit card didn't work.
Oh, shit. My throat is already dry.
You want some of this Sprite Zero? Some SZ?
Do you want to use my credit card?
Yeah. No.
Machine.
Like the one next to it takes the card. The one doesn't. The next, you know.
Does it take dollar bills?
Dollar bills?
Yeah.
Yeah, but Matt has to do it.
Okay.
What?
No, don't worry, they can catch me up.
Here, you want some dollar bills?
Always the guy that carries cash gets fucked.
Okay, first of all,
he's the one carrying.
I want
cash.
You to dance for it.
Oh no,
I'll stuff
I have
it in
enough.
Your pants,
here, Chris.
Okay, well then I want you to dance and stuff them in your own pants.
You know what? I'll be back.
I want to know why you said the guy carrying cash always gets fucked.
That's
carrying cash, and he was about to give you some.
That's a self-starting stripper,
I mean
right there.
To go upstairs. I don't mean having to pay. I don't mind that.
Here, do you need my card to get back in?
Physical activity.
Do you need my card to get back in over here?
Yeah. And I need the key to your Jaguar.
What?
Nope, just
what?
Nope,
I didn't. Okay. What are you talking about? What Jaguar?
Don't be ashamed of it, Chris. You can. No one. It's not like you're driving around in your Jaguar going, oh, gee, oh boy, I can't believe I'm in this.
I don't know what he sees me.
I don't know what you're talking about. And we're talking about.
It's all right.
I bought an actual Jaguar. I think there was some confusion. I ride around on a jungle cat.
The back of it, yeah. So funny to go from the humble beginnings in Memphis to a Jaguar.
Again, guys, these are very big words you're throwing around right now.
Nice faded tee. Tell us more about your Jaguar.
Jonah,
you're taking the time.
Well, thank you for being here, Joe Casey. We're about at our 5.5 minute mark. But enough about expensive vehicles. I'm glad to have you on. I think the Man of Action Studios initiative is a very interesting model, and I think something that I think would be of interest to our listeners as well. But just basically getting a collective group of really smart, creative people together who are like, let's make our own thing and make cool stuff. Like that's a great model. And I think
we fooled them all with the smart part.
But people probably know Ben 10.
If you're either a 7-year-old child or the parent of a 7-year-old child, you probably know Ben 10.
And the other Joe was on Comic Book Club.
That's right.
Talking about Spider-Man.
That's right. Which we produced that show.
That's fucking awesome.
Yeah.
So you guys are all comic writers in your own right, but mm-hmm. what was it that made you go, this moving picture thing is the way to go?
Well, it was really, it's so lame, and it's really kind of the company line where we started the company about 10, 12 years ago.
Yeah.
Just to go to San Diego and have a place to sit. Wow, water.
I remembered that I'm on the network, and I asked security to open up makeup, and they said, okay.
Oh, good.
And they asked me about the iPhone 5.
So you didn't have to pay for anything. Why do they keep calling it the iPhone 5? It's the 6th iteration of the phone.
Why didn't you give me a water?
Here, right here.
Oh. I didn't know I had to bring my own water.
You didn't.
You should have had dollar bills. I should probably take my wallet back.
I guess so.
Jeez.
So I'll get it. I'll get it later.
There's a slight bit of anger behind that throw.
That's a slight bit of anger behind everything he does.
It wasn't a toss.
Oh, really?
It was a throw.
I just thought.
Oh, is this your ball? Is this your ball?
It's kind of like when you have a Jaguar.
You know, guys, when you're driving down your street, Jaguar.
Jaguar? You going to say Jaguar now? Are you going to do that?
Jaguar. I still have not admitted anything.
Fair enough.
I was just talking to Joe about the sort of the Man of Action Studios initiative. I mean, a very sort of similar thing to what I think we did, or what a lot of creativity types have done of just saying, hey, why don't we just partner up with people we like and just make stuff we want to make?
Right. And from that, as you guys have learned, you create your own space. You create your own career, really.
Yeah.
You know, which is what we ended up doing.
So we need to make a Ben 10 and then we sit on money, right?
They don't even spend.
You can all have Jaguars. Yeah.
Again, this is reference to together. It gets reference to this car that I still have not admitted anything about.
That I edited out. I mean,
that's it. We're going to make Ben 11. There's one more alien. It's one more alien.
Yeah.
So when did Man of Action Studios start?
It was 10, 12 years ago. We'd all known each other. We'd all worked on the big franchises at Marvel and DC.
Sure.
We worked on the X-Men together. And then we moved over to DC. We worked on Superman together.
Yeah.
Because, you know, they have like multiple titles of those books. And we just got to know each other over the years and got really friendly. Three of us lived in LA. And so we started hanging out. And then as San Diego started to grow and swell, we figured, well, if we had a table and we all sat together, then we wouldn't have to walk around. Be easy on our feet. Be great.
Yeah.
And during that whole period, as we were just kind of, and we were thinking, maybe we should do like a website. You know, it was those days where we thought, hey, maybe let's build a website together.
One of those internet sites that people are always talking about.
It was very charming back then.
Lots of Flash animation.
Yeah, did you go for GeoCities or Angel Fire?
We were deciding. It was a toss-up. Mm-hmm. And then in the middle of that, I was writing Uncanny X-Men, the monthly series at Marvel. And Activision came to me and said, we're going to do a video game, an X-Men video game, a new X-Men video game. And do you want to write it? And I said, no, not really. But it was into a different media. And I knew how much work it was going to be. And I knew how much money they weren't paying at the time. So I thought, let me get my bros in to do most of the work.
Yeah.
And I'll do as little work as possible for 1/4 of the money.
Oh, that's genius.
And we got to brand ourselves. And that game came out. It did fairly well. So that kind of started how we branched out from comic books. Because we had no plan at all. And I think the next thing that really happened was we were friends with Matt Senreich, who co-created Robot Chicken, mm-hmm. Seth Green. But he worked at Wizard Magazine for a long time. In fact, Robot Chicken kind of sprang out of Wizard Magazine. They did a magazine called Toy Fair, which was all the action figures posed in silly pictures.
Seth loves the toys. He loves the action figures. Mods the action figures.
Yes.
He's masterful.
So Matt had sold, they'd sold Robot Chicken, and the guy at Cartoon Network said, look, we want to do an original superhero show. Because they'd been licensing DC stuff and apparently were sick of it, which you tend to get when you deal with big corporations. So we went in and we pitched a bunch of stuff, and Ben 10 was one of them, and they bought it. And at the time, it was like, wow, cool, we get a show on the air, maybe. And then it took about 2 years of development, and then suddenly it was on the air, and then suddenly there were bed sheets and...
You know, toothbrushes,
medical supplies,
fact hacks.
It's also nice that the name rhyme too. Do you think that helped some too, a little bit in the pit? Those are the kind of things in pitches that you know, it's like you've worked so hard on the content of the pitch, and then you're pitching to some network guy, and they're like, I really liked that rhymed. You're like, really? But what about all the content? Yeah. Fuck it. That's fine.
Well, the content all didn't change. I mean, it got added to. I mean, basically, we were like, he turns into 10 things. You know, it's a kid who turns into 10 superheroes. And that kind of morphed into alien superheroes. And I mean, it went through the typical Hollywood bullshit development process.
Right.
And then it was a hit, which was quite shocking.
Why is that shocking? Well, I guess because you never expect anything.
I have no, they hate when I say this, I have really no animation thing. Like, I have no real Jones to be in animation. Ironically, so I had no grounding in like, oh, well, this happens, then this happens, and this. I had no sort of path that we could follow. I just thought, well, we have a show on the air. It's a nice line on your resume, and then who knows what happens after that. I didn't think anything would happen after that.
And each year, that table at Comic-Con grew.
It did.
Have you updated your resume yet?
Slightly. We put Spider-Man on it. But we also created another show at Cartoon Network called Generator Rex.
Yeah.
And we're doing other shows. Now we're getting into sort of global partnerships with companies in Korea and France, and you know, it's sort of all over the place now.
Big time now.
Yeah.
Now it's all big time.
Yeah.
Is now a bad time for people to try to enter the comics business, or a good time, like as for young writers who want to?
It's always a good time.
Good.
I think it's a good time to get in there and be exploited by the big companies, make a little bank, build your name up. It's a good time to put out properties that you own. You know, Kirkman's a good example of that. It kind of worked out for him.
Yeah.
So it's a pretty good time, but I mean, you have to love comics. That's kind of my only criteria, is that people who sort of are doing the bandwagon thing, like, oh, comics are kind of where it's at. Let me take my old screenplay that didn't sell and just do it as a comic.
Right.
Maybe then it'll become a movie. That shit kind of pisses me off a little bit.
Yeah. Well, you can't write comics the same way you write a movie.
No.
Like it's just a different, it's just much more, it's, I think it's actually, and this is going to sound weird to say, I think comics are strangely more visual than film.
Yes.
In a way, because they, you have so few pages in which to tell a complete story, and that you can't distract people with motion and sound.
Right.
Like, it just has to be, like, the action has to be really engaging, and you don't have a lot of room to overwrite.
Yeah. Well, and the better the comic, the more an interactive experience it is. Movies is a spectator sport, but comics, a reader brings just as much to the experience as the comic gives to the reader. If it's a good one.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, and the thing about, you know, somebody taking their old screenplay and making it into a comic is they're expecting it to be a spectator sport, like a movie would be, or a TV show.
Right.
But that's just not what comics are.
Yeah. You know,
they're closer to video games in the fact that you're in command of a lot more. You're in command of pace. You're in command of how fast you read it, how slow you read it. And you, a reader brings as much information between the panels as anybody, you know. And it's sort of the comic book creator's job to try and exert as much control as they can. You know, slow the reader down when you want them to slow down, or speed them up when you want them to speed up. So it's, I mean, it's definitely more of an art form than even sort of mass media, as it's become big movies and TV shows, sort of gives it credit for. You know, I mean, to do a good comic is, it's a skill.
Yeah.
You know?
I mean, I've had offers to write comics, and I just get kind of like, I don't know if I'm that. I mean, I don't know if that's my.
What kind of offers, might I ask?
I can't say.
Okay.
But they are.
High and Lois.
The Mary Worth.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah. I don't know if you're familiar with Rex Morgan, M.D.
Yes. Yes.
I'm turning Prince that into Valiant. A graphic novel.
Prince Valiant. Love that haircut.
Marmaduke, my Get Off the Couch series.
Yeah. Hagar the Horrible.
Yeah. Hagar the Horrible. Yeah.
The
Beetle Bailey. So
the Near Side is going to be a good one, I think.
The Near Side.
Yeah. It's just blurry versions of the Far Side.
Either that, or, that's funnier than my bit. I was gonna say, or it's just really obvious, like how the dinosaurs became extinct, and it's just like an asteroid hit. It's like it's not. There's no irony in it whatsoever. Yeah. They're just
no irony. What?
Straightforward comics.
That'll never fly.
There is a title of an existing property that said, "Would you like to write some issues of this?"
Let me try.
I said to you, "Go ahead."
Let me tell you, somebody at either DC or Marvel.
No.
No, Dark Horse.
No, I'm not going to say.
Think of who he knows.
Stop it!
I'm just saying, I don't know either, but oh, gotcha. It's kind of fun.
Oh, I think I know now.
Oh, he said he started. Never mind.
But you should do it if you like comics and you think you want to.
It's a good challenge, Chris.
It is a good challenge, but.
Yeah, you do. You just
my
try.
Plate's a little full at the moment.
Try writing one, and then if you like it, then say yes.
No, that's
only
a good idea.
Like a string, right?
It's a good idea. Yeah. But I just, you know, I know that there's a specific art form to it that I just feel like I'd want to practice a lot before.
I'll ghostwrite it for
you. Because I don't look at it as a kind of thing like, oh, I know how to write. I could probably just go write a comic. Like, I don't think. And I do like comics, but I'm not, you know, when I was growing up, I had a very specific experience with comics that veered me away from them for a while because my best friend was
beat up by a comic once.
This kid that I was best friends with was awesome. Like, he was a nerd, but there was something about him that he just didn't take shit from people. And so, like, when people would try to bully us, he would instantly just hit him in the face. Like,
there
he was
go.
The best kind of pal to have in like sixth and seventh grade. Cause I was afraid of confrontation. And, you know, like, some kid would get in his face and just without even thinking, he would just, like, cold cock him. And then no one fucked with him.
That's
and
great.
He had the most insane... His name was Mike Soper. I fucking love that kid because he wasn't any bigger than me. He just didn't take shit from people. And he fucking loved comics to the extent that in his attic, you know, like, every week he would go to the store and buy two versions of everything. Oh. One that he kept in the Mylar and one that he would carefully remove, read, and then carefully replace so that it was in slightly worse condition. And his collection was insane. Like, just the
long
crates
boxes.
And crates of and boxes of everything was organized by, you know, by universe and character. Jeez. And era and... And as a, you know, like a 10, 11 year old kid, I was like, oh, I don't think I'm going to put this much effort into this. Like, I mean, it was so far over. And at the same time is when I got my first computer and I started getting into video games and, you know, like action figures. And so for me, collecting comics just wasn't, I didn't understand in my child brain. Oh, you can just buy them and read them for fun. Like, it doesn't have to be a fucking job.
But let me ask something. So he bought two copies of everything.
Yeah.
But did he keep them in separate places?
He kept them in separate places.
Okay.
He had bins of ones that were never opened and bins. Of, and the, so imagine there are two different versions of everything within this filing system.
Oh, okay. No, wait. Oh, see, that's ridiculous. Because if you're going to have two things, you want to separate them by location. So if... The attic burns down.
Yeah.
You still have everything safe.
In the basement.
Exactly. So,
oh, no, I don't remember that he had anything like that. I think they were all just in one. Like, his parents had, their attic had been turned into a rec room. And I just remember just this carpeted rec room, just one of those 80s houses. And it was just, you know, those fucking boxes as far as you could see. And it just freaked me out.
Would you go with him to buy comics?
Yeah, I would go with him.
This would be Memphis Comics and Records? Or?
Probably, or whatever, you know, whatever at the time in the 80s was open.
It was on Highland?
Was it on Highland?
Yeah, it was right next to the University.
Of Memphis?
Yes.
Right near where I saw Pee-wee's Big Adventure in the movie theater.
It was right down from yet another barbecue place.
What? Yeah. In Memphis? I miss Memphis barbecue a lot.
No, Memphis.
I was excited to come here because I don't know anybody in my adult life that lived in Memphis long enough to know about it and remember it. And
oh yeah, yeah. I just went back. Yeah. My girlfriend Chloe and I just went back and visited my dad for a few days, and it was great. It was great.
Are you from there?
I lived there for 5 years.
You were on your water trip.
Yeah, yeah, sorry. And did you already
your
talk
failed
about
water trip?
Iffy, bold.
I can talk about Memphis like the whole thing. You know, I mean, I loved the town. I loved being.
Did you
there.
Ever go to All Star Lanes?
I did. I had a bowling class in college.
Memphis is great. And we went to, you know, we swung by the old Pink Palace Museum, which was awesome. And I drove her by the zoo. We didn't go in, but the zoo is Egyptian themed. Because Memphis is the sister city of Memphis, Egypt, or so they've claimed. I don't know if Memphis, Egypt is aware of this.
Memphis, Egypt has their own Mud Island, which is a whole theme park about Memphis, Tennessee.
Yeah. Mud Island is basically a
weird barbecue.
Mud Island was a silt deposit that started forming in the Mississippi River a long time ago. And then they were like, well, we should just build shit on that. And so then it became an island and they called it Mud Island because it is literally a silt deposit. And then I remember when they built Mud Island Amphitheater was where I went to see my first concert that my parents took me to concerts that they wanted to see all the time when I was a kid. This was the first one I wanted to see was Men at Work.
Nice.
And INXS opened for them.
Wow. That would change soon enough.
It did. Wow, yeah. But Mud Island. Mud Island Amphitheater. Still there.
Yeah. The pyramid. They built the pyramid there.
Pyramid there, which is now... So Memphis builds this pyramid, you guys. And it's going
to Egypt build theirs to in honor of Memphis's?
Okay. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Because you know there was an alien race, and that's how the pyramids were built. And so they had this prism that they could see into the future. And so they saw Memphis built this,
Stargate,
and then in the past they built it.
Stargate.
Wow.
Quaid.
You just said Quaid.
Yeah. So. Memphis builds this pyramid. It's going to be this mega arena that's going to house all of the sporting events and be this huge centerpiece in downtown Memphis where they were trying to revitalize at the same time as Beale Street. Because downtown was getting a little dumpy.
A little sketchy.
And so they build this pyramid and then it almost instantly fails.
Well, they had the big acts came through. I remember I saw Guns N' Roses there. I saw Billy Joel there. I saw Kiss there.
It didn't last long. It was a few years. Now the pyramid is the world's largest bass fishing supply store, I believe.
Is it a Bass Pro Shop?
I think it might be. Oh, or it's something. I don't know. But anyway, my dad was saying, like, yeah, now it's all sport fishing. So this fucking pyramid, a pyramid is all devoted to bass fishing.
That's insane.
And it was a venue before that.
It was what?
It was a venue before
that. It was a sports arena.
20,000 seater.
Yeah.
That's insane that it's just a store now.
And it's big enough that they could build a bass stream in it and then have people fish like from stage like it's a concert.
Oh, well, you can fish in it?
No, I don't know if you can. Sorry. I'm just saying it's big enough that you could.
If it's a Bass Pro Shop, you can.
It's big enough that you could. That's how big the pyramid is.
I'll have to go back and see this. Now, do you remember if I said Mongo's? Would you remember that?
Oh yeah, Mongo's. You mean the like the 50s kitschy shop?
Well, there was a guy there, and I forget what the guy's name was, but he sort of ran. He was like this weird sort of character downtown. I don't remember if his name was Dr. Mongo or not. But there was like a weird club that kind of went away while I was.
Oh no, I was thinking of a vintage store.
Guys, I just want to let you know that the Bass Pro Shop Pyramid in Memphis will open in the fourth quarter of 2013.
It hasn't opened yet.
Oh my God.
So right now they're just filling it with bass.
Yep. I was almost hoping it was a bit that I was going to play along with.
No.
You know what would be fucking awesome? Is that
220,000 square feet.
Right? If they just filled the entire pyramid almost up to the tip with fish, and then you could just walk up to the tip and just fish from it.
Yeah.
And then just slide
just
back down.
Just the tip.
Yeah.
Just the tip.
Just the tip.
Bass fishing.
But there's no reason to go back to Memphis except to visit if you have family.
Visit my dad.
Nothing happens there.
No,
anymore.
But it's a nice town. Like I like the vibe of it. And the weird thing about Memphis is that apparently, you know, my dad was saying, that it's, you know, the city's kind of fallen into a bit of disrepair. He says it's like we're usually in the top three crime category in every crime category in Memphis. But I didn't feel unsafe when I went there. Like, it feels like a nice little city.
All my relatives moved out first to Germantown, then to Collierville.
Yeah,
so it's like the white people exodus of a typical southern burg.
But didn't that happen most like a lot in the like late 70s and early 80s, where everyone just kind of started pushing out more?
Yes, but Memphis kind of hung in there. When I lived there, I lived in Midtown, and then I lived downtown.
Midtown's nice.
It was nice, but then I went back probably about 6 years ago. And when I went to Memphis State, I lived in an apartment that was sort of in Fraternity Row.
Yeah.
And it was typical sort of motel-style apartments. Two levels, all doors facing out. And it was fine. I went back there, and I went to the place that I lived, and it was like a crack house.
Oh, shit.
I mean, disrepair would be a nice way of putting it. I just thought, I hope it didn't look like this when I lived here. What are my parents thinking?
But you had your college goggles on. You're like, hey, this is just a house.
It's a palace.
But exactly. Anything to keep me out of the dorms.
The Pink Palace Museum, guys, just for a little trivia, was the house of the founder of Piggly Wiggly, which is a very famous old grocery store chain. And then I guess they lost all their money or something, and so the house got taken by someone and turned into a museum.
Now, if you went to, were you in there in your high school years, were you cool enough to go to the Antenna Club?
No. I moved away.
Sound like a place you have to be cool.
I moved
enough
away
to go to.
In the middle of my freshman year of high school. Okay. So I wasn't old enough to really go anywhere.
Gotcha.
My mom remarried. We moved away, and so. I haven't lived in Memphis for a long time.
People who listen to this podcast, who live in Memphis, they're loving this. They're going to be loving this podcast.
All four Memphians who listen to the podcast will love it. Memphis is a very cool town, though. It's like there's cool, fun, smart people there. There's nerds. You know, it's a good town. No real comedy scene in Memphis that I'm aware of. Strangely, I mean, there must be some sort of underground show somewhere, but comedy clubs always fail in Memphis.
There was one club that I remember.
Tennessee.
No, well, the one that I remember was on Overton Square.
Yeah.
Right there on the corner, across from Rascals.
Yep. I remember I'd been there.
Oh, Rascals?
No, the comedy club in Overton Square.
Yeah.
And now Overton Square is fucking ghost town.
Is it really?
There's nothing there now. Oh, we drove by it. So I was like, oh, you got to see Overton Square. That's it. Nothing. I mean, it's like there's still buildings there.
Yeah.
But there's nothing. There used to be like an ice skating rink and all sorts of fun. And, you know.
You know, there was a one of my last experiences there before I moved away. I played in a band there, and they had this music festival called the Crossroads Music Festival, which was supposed to be just a citywide, all the clubs.
Is that the music festival where Ralph Macchio has to play the devil, played by Steve Vai?
It is.
Okay.
It is. And loses for some, or Steve Vai loses. What universe?
Seriously.
Well, it's because he didn't practice classical scales. That's why Steve Vai loses, as we all remember.
That must be.
Yeah, the devil always takes that part for granted.
Yeah.
Lost to Charlie Daniels, too.
Yeah. So this music festival, as with all things in Memphis, it was kind of shoddily run. So as a kind of a fuck you to this music festival, which my band was so low on the totem pole that we didn't get in the first year, I wrote this song that just kind of blasted the thing. And I knew people, sort of guy worked at the Memphis Flyer, I knew.
Yep.
And so the song got around. So the next following year, I got this call from a guy who was sort of a promoter in town and said, I don't remember what the guy's name was. So-and-so wants to see you. And I was like, who is this person? Just come meet him. And you ever see the movie... the Favreau movie Maid.
Yeah.
He was like the Peter Falk character in Maid, down to having like horses pictures in his office. And it was like a local kind of like a mafioso, kind, but in the South, you know?
Right.
And he had me in and he was like, I heard your song, man. Thought it was good. He was actually charmed by my chutzpah.
Oh, right. And kind that of you would spit in the face of his festival.
Yes. Mm. And so he was not connected to by name.
Oh.
Nor is he connected to many of the strip clubs that existed around the airport, if you recall.
So he started having you run errands for him around town.
It was like that Simpsons episode where Bart shows up and
makes
Bart
is Manhattan.
Yep. Yes, yeah. Exactly.
But then Principal Skinner keeps him, and then one day the other guy makes a lifeless Manhattan.
That's right. Yeah. And I just hang out in his office, which was just right in the center of Overton Square. He was not off in the boonies somewhere. He was kind of right in the middle of it all. But just this kind of nondescript office. And I was 22 years old. I didn't know any better. Yeah. So that's interesting, you know.
Hey, if you want to work over there with your shirt off, I'm just saying.
Surrogate father figure who might have some shady business dealings. And I think the promoter guy who kind of wrote me in at some point was like, don't hang around here anymore. Jesus. For your own good, don't hang around here anymore.
You don't ask questions.
So I thought, okay.
Don't look through anything. Don't
I took that advice. Not only that, I moved the fuck out of town. I just got out of there.
Where did you go after Memphis?
L.A.
Oh, you came to L.A. Yeah. Straight to L.A.
Yeah.
And did comics start in Memphis for you?
I was submitting stuff. I submitted stuff to D.C. when I was 15 years old.
Yeah.
That's how deluded I was.
Did you get the, like, did you draw as well or just
draw? I don't draw.
No.
No.
So you didn't get the How to Draw the Marvel Way or anything?
Oh, I got that book.
Yeah.
Anything that was about a how-to book, I was like right on.
Oh, man. I had that book. I used to try to draw the shit out of that stuff.
Yeah. That scene where the guy's on the rooftop and Spider-Man webs his legs.
Oh, man.
It's a famous scene that's never been in any comic. But yeah, I was into anything that was sort of like, that was how much of a geek I was for comics. It wasn't just reading the comics. It was getting the fanzines in the day, like the Comics Journal and Amazing Heroes and Comics Interview, all the kind of behind the scenes, you know, magazines that I would get and sort of devour and pore over. And went to the Atlanta Fantasy Fair before it was Dragon Con. It was called the Atlanta Fantasy Fair. I went there a couple times. And they had a pathetic convention in Memphis that was in the Omni Hotel when it was the Omni, the big circular hotel, mm-hmm. right where the Loop kind of runs through Midtown.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And they had a convention there. I remember going there in like 89, like right when I moved there. So there wasn't much of a geek scene in Memphis either. Talking about no comedy. There was no scenes of any time.
My geek scene was built around the, I went to a small school that was kindergarten through 12th grade. And I feel like there were only even a few hundred people in it at that.
Right.
And for me, it was chess club. And then the chess club was the same as a computer lab.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, for me, it was just chess club, computers, video games. You know, that was around the time where I got the, you know, my TRS-80 and then the TRS-80 color right. computer 2 and the...
Now, was the first computer lab in your school like in the closet somewhere? Like they just found a space?
No, it was actually the high school math teacher was the chess coach and he also had the computer lab.
Mm.
And so there was a bank of, I want to say like 6 Apple IIe's.
Wow.
It's
pretty good.
So it was not... Yeah, yeah. The bowling dollars sent Chris Hardwick to private school.
Yeah.
So,
right.
So we had
the
Apple IIe's.
Jaguars. Yeah.
Stop it with that. Motherfucker. I just.
What'd you get in your eyes? Money?
Oh, I'm crying Sacagawea dollars everywhere. Guys, please. We can still be friends. I have a higher echelon of culture that I'm accustomed to now.
Chris, I don't know if you realize this, but you're speaking in a highfalutin British accent.
I'm sorry, Jonah. Could you say it to Monica, my assistant? Could you please schedule your comment with Monica, and then we'll have a talk about it later? Guys, I mean, I'm just saying, I'm...
What, are we 6 months out of that really happening?
Please, guys. Nothing has changed, except I have less time for you.
Let him drive that Jaguar in Memphis and see how far he goes.
But I don't... It'll
be a whole different story.
It's really pretty, you guys.
Nice. Weird choice going with the chrome. Like,
what
the whole
chrome?
Thing.
Oh.
I just want the kids to think you're driving that Fisker, that Beaver.
Chrome Jaguar.
He hopped into it a bit.
What chrome? What are you talking about?
No, I am doing a bit, too. We are rife with bits today.
Well, so many Jaguar bits.
Stop it.
Wow.
So, do you want to write a comic about jaguars and then how one
I'm taking mental notes as
transformed into
I'd more go psychological, a guy who's ashamed he's driving a Jaguar and somehow comes to grips with it. Like the Dark Knight Returns of the Jaguar.
He tinted the windshield.
Listen, if you want to be since you're talking about it, I may or may not have gotten this car you were speaking of.
So?
Wow.
Because
no one's gonna cry sellout.
Well,
they'll scream it.
But. I literally only said, give me the keys to your Jaguar as though I was going to steal your car. Regardless of whatever car type you had, I would have said the name of whatever car you had.
Fuck.
It just so happened that I know that you have a Jaguar.
I feel bad about
it. 2 weeks ago, I would have said, give me the Audi keys.
I feel really bad about it.
You would drive a Leaf like Will Ferrell.
That he was probably given. Let's
yeah,
be honest.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
Sure.
Joe, what do you drive? You got Ben 10 money.
I drive a Saturn.
Nice.
What do you got? SL2? What are you driving? Ion?
No. It's like an L300.
I felt like I'm one. Oh, yeah, I just made this decision where I'm like, I'm one car away from getting an environmentally friendly car.
What?
You have to go up to the top and then come back down.
The Jaguar's not the top. You'd have to start Maserati? Getting into like Aston. You know what?
No.
Since we're on car talk, no, I don't like Maseratis. The technology on Maseratis is not that great.
It's very behind.
Way behind.
I would say, you know, you'd be getting up into Aston Martin. The Virage is a very nice car.
The Maserati is what you get when you can't afford an Aston Martin.
How do they compare to my Honda Fit?
Pretty well. I mean, gas mileage wise.
Can I tell you
something?
Let me tell you this. Your Honda Fit has better technology in it than the Maserati or the Aston Martin, for that matter.
Because I got paddle shifters.
You can probably Bluetooth your iPhone to your car.
That was an upgrade I wasn't willing to pay
but
for.
The fact is you could.
Not in my car. In a car.
Air conditioning first and then maybe.
And then
pretty
then.
Much. My air conditioning's broken.
Oh man.
Yeah. Well, it's a Wrangler. I can just take the top off.
I just like pretty cars. I like really pretty
Chris,
cars.
No one is faulting you for this.
No, but I feel like
Except
a douchebag about
faulting
it.
Yourself.
I feel like a cock.
Don't
can
worry
I tell you when
it.
I drove that car off
well,
the lot?
After the podcast.
Yeah.
When I drove that car off, I'll cut all this out.
What did you learn about Joe Casey?
Well, Chris is a learning about Chris
when
right
I
now.
Drove that car off the lot, and then we'll get to you.
We should have it, and then we'll get to you.
I still feel guilty about it. Really? I still feel guilty about it.
You should have gone to the worst
guilt?
Neighborhood with
running
over
that old
no, no, no.
Jaguar.
Well, that's a big part of the guilt. But what is the guilt you feel?
For the thing that
you've worked 20 years to earn.
I just feel like I don't deserve it. I feel like it's too much of a nice car.
Is it
and
the
I,
people around the
you
world?
You don't, and it
need.
Is, but just get used to it.
Shut there you
up. Go. And I was just wondering if it was, you know, or the people in Los Angeles that need money for schools.
Well,
I mean
Joe,
what was the guilt? Where the
Joe's not off the hook. The L300 was the top of the line Saturn when the company still existed.
Yeah,
so.
Back in 2005.
Yep.
Do they still? Saturn
doesn't exist anymore.
No, I know, but yeah. because Saturn, going back to Memphis, the Saturn plant was in Memphis.
No, it was in Tennessee.
It was in Tennessee. It wasn't in Memphis.
Right.
But that was a big deal when they put that Saturn plant in Tennessee because it brought a lot of jobs.
Yeah, at least 100.
Yeah,
this guy's pressing buttons.
I remember
the machines do the work.
We went shopping for when Saturn first came out. My parents went to go; they were looking at them, and they had this door. Their big thing was the dent-resistant panels on the doors, and they had a door that you could hit with a sledgehammer.
Really?
Yeah, and it wouldn't dent it. It was pretty great.
And that's the reason you get the car.
Those didn't last either.
Comes with
a
sledgehammer.
No, they didn't.
Yeah,
but. Let's talk about comics a little bit.
Okay.
So wait, you moved to LA and then you worked at Tower Records, correct?
I did.
Yeah.
Which one?
Which one? Westwood?
No, the one in Pasadena.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
Poor Tower Records.
I was so naive about LA. We looked at a map and...
No shit, that's exactly what I did. I moved to Pasadena when I came out here.
Because I thought it would be a transitional, but at first, this is the best. I looked at a map and I thought, well, what's LA adjacent, but you know, still... sort of, you know, close to it. I know. Here, look at this on the map. Oxnard. And somebody who'd been said, no, not Oxnard.
Was the scale off? Did you not see?
Well, it was like a full map. So,
oh, yeah.
You know, it was just very tiny.
Yeah.
It looked right close to it, you know.
I mean, you know, compared to Idaho, it's LA adjacent.
It is. Mm. It is. It's in the same state.
It's such a weird thing, though. Anywhere else, you're like 12 miles away from the center of Los Angeles. You're going to be there in 15 minutes. No problem. And then
yeah.
Oh, yeah. No, LA, everything in LA is traffic. Far
45 minutes to an
but
hour.
Pasadena was a good sort of middle
play.
I mean, I you know, 6 months and I was like, yeah, Silver Lake, that's where I need to be.
Yeah, if
you
I was in San Pedro and it was just it's like it's just one freeway right up into like, you know, Los Angeles.
If you live in East Los Angeles and someone poisoned you and they said every day you have to drive to Santa Monica to get the antidote, after about 4 days you'd go, nah, I had a good run.
Yeah. That's even anywhere to Santa Monica is just, that's like the hell drive. Have you ever worked in Santa Monica?
No, I even avoid meetings in Santa Monica.
Yeah. Mosher's doing that now. He's driving into Santa Monica for work,
he
and he's
like
very
4 hours
ornery.
In a car a day, right?
Yeah.
Yes.
He's a little fucked off about that. As well he should be. But I actually Tower Records was a great place to work.
Yeah.
Because it was like because it was perceived as being a cool job, even though they paid you $2 an hour to work there. It's kind of like Marvel. It's like, hey, it's Tower Records. You want to work here.
Right.
Yeah. We're doing you a favor.
That's most record stores, though.
It is. Yeah. It is. And who got the last laugh on them? Those fuckers. But it was a very much a melting pot of like different, you know, people and, you know, I mean, different races. All and coming from Tennessee, I was like, wow, you know, black guys like comics. You know, I'd never met any that was that, you know, that it was into what I was into, or girls like comics. It was so out of my range of experience that. You know, that Tower Records gig for, I don't know, it probably lasted about a year there. It was pretty good. It was like really eye-opening of like, wow, this is why I moved to L.A. To
I like the eye-opening
this.
Cultural experience you had in Pasadena.
Yes.
Well, but compared to Memphis,
it really is.
I mean, Memphis is a big, small town. And for all of the things that are great about it, it's still very much, there's a great racial divide.
Mm-hmm.
And thank God,
is it really a great racial divide?
Okay,
it's a pretty good racial divide.
I mean, great as in expansive.
Yeah, yeah.
And you know, it just you forget sometimes. I mean, thank God my family's not this way, but you know, you go back and then you just kind of see what you just get used to living in Los Angeles or New York, where you're like, oh no, everyone's cool with everybody. You know, like there's no big
no one cares.
And there it's like an issue. And it's like there are issues there. There are actual racial issues in parts of the South. And I'm not shitting on I love this. I love so many things about the South, but that is one area where it's like, oh yeah, there are black people and there are white people, and they a lot of times do not cohabitate in certain ways. And it just feels I guess if you live there, you're used to it. But as an outsider, when I go there, I feel the tension.
But it's also like a weird thing of like you go back and also people are very friendly, much more friendly than they are on the coast.
Yeah.
But underneath that friendliness is a horrible.
Well, if you're in their group, if you're in their group.
Yeah.
But that's the other thing about Southern culture is being very outwardly polite. But if you do have something bad to say about someone, you know. It's bad, but it's hit. They keep it down.
Yeah, the funny thing is, even when I lived there, I didn't even talk to the other guys in the comic book store. And I would go to buy comics. It was not like I didn't feel like I'm with my people there either. I mean, I feel like it's a kind of a thing about the South where everyone's very sort of in their own space. Even if you're amongst your own kind, you're still very guarded, and it's polite and congenial, but there's not real connection between people.
Yeah, when I lived in Memphis, there were really two main racial groups. There were black people, there were white people. There was a small Asian population, which I think has probably grown a little bit. But
population.
but now there's a growing Latino population because of Tunica, Mississippi.
Right.
And the casinos, a lot of Latinos have migrated to the South to work. You know, because this whole industry sprung up. And so now there's actually a Latino population.
Chris, those are Native Americans.
Oh, sorry. So now you actually have like Mexican restaurant, like authentic Mexican restaurants in the South. And it was never that way when I was growing up. It was really just
Casa Vega.
Just Casa Vega. Local reference.
Is that what it was? That was Casa Vega.
There's a Casa Vega in Ventura, though. That's really good.
Okay. No, there was something else. But it was the one place.
Taco Tico.
No. It wasn't quite that, but it was.
Well,
like,
there was.
It was just down from Overton Square. It was
there was
like,
a place called Gertrude and Gonzalez, which I think was sort of like a TGI Fridays. Of Mexican food
and German food.
God, I remember. I wish I remember what this place is called, because
Taco Schnitzel.
I took somebody back who lived in L.A. when I visited, and I was like, "Oh, we're gonna go to this great Mexican place."
Yeah,
and they were like, "This place sucks. This food is terrible." And I'm there with all my Memphis homies that still live there, and they're like, "This is great Mexican food." And the person from LA was like,
that happened to me.
Shit.
That happened to me when I went back to Hawaii. There was this place I would always go to. I was like, this is the best Mexican in Hawaii. And I went back after living here a few years, and I was like, what was I thinking? This is like borderline Taco Bell. This is just the worst place. And I would always get so excited. My parents were like, we're going to La Cantina. I was like, all right. Yeah. And it was just disgusting. It was just the worst. And there's still no real good Mexican food in
Hawaii.
One
step above like frozen microwave taquitos.
Yeah. It's a little bit of frost on some of them.
Yeah. But Memphis has the Rendezvous.
The Rendezvous is great. I mean, there's the barbecue in Memphis. You just can't. It just nowhere else can replicate. I mean, obviously, Texas has great barbecue, but it's very specific to Texas. Memphis barbecue is just very, very, very specific, and it's really hard. It's very hard to replicate.
Is it more the sauce, more the vinegar? Is it?
I don't know what it is. It's just the sauce is tangy in a certain way. I don't know I don't know how to describe it.
And the Rendezvous and also Corky's, which is now more of a chain. They do the dry rub, which was excellent.
Yeah, there's a Corky's in the airport, in the Memphis airport. And I remember stopping over. I had a layover in Memphis for like 45 minutes, and I fucking ran to the terminal with Corky's and like shoved it in my face.
You know, you can order that shit online.
Yeah, they ship it in dry ice.
Yeah, it's pretty good.
It's good stuff.
Yeah, it's I kind of miss that shit.
But you know, like you know, I'm not suggesting that everyone in the South is racist. It's not like that. It's just that race relationships are very different to I believe what we are accustomed to.
But it's also just what you're saying. If you are there your whole life, you either reconcile with it if you're outraged, or it's just is what it is. You have to go away and come back and see it through, you know, a new perspective to know how bad it is. They don't think it's bad.
No.
They think it's fine.
Yeah.
And even, you know, the most tolerant individuals who happen to live there probably just have somehow, it's not like they put blinders on, but it's when it's your life, when it's just around you.
Right.
You kind of assimilate.
Let's go back and make some changes. Come on, guys.
Bring the recording equipment.
A podcast will fix everything that ails you, Memphis.
Yeah, right.
But you know, it's still a lovely city, and I actually really, you know, I enjoyed going back there, and you know, it was good.
Shout out to all the Memphians listening.
Memphians,
do you remember when you wrote that
Rock 103
to DC when you were 15? Do you remember what the story was?
I do. It was a Batman story. It was about a grave robber who was hitting all of the rich people in Gotham City and eventually hits his parents who are buried.
Oh. You know?
And the dilemma was he knows about this grave robber, so he's scoping out his own parents' grave to make sure that they are untouched. But another emergency happens in Gotham City that he has to go and take care of. And while he's gone taking care of that's exactly when his parents' graves.
Did that guy stage the other emergency?
I wasn't quite that clever. It was a fluke of happenstance.
Plus, that guy wouldn't know that Bruce Wayne was Batman.
That's true, too.
Of course. Duh.
Yeah.
Well, then there's that.
It doesn't say, you know, Thomas Wayne, Batman's dad. It doesn't say that on YouTube.
Did you see the, I think it's the Above Averages YouTube channel. Did you see The Dark Knight and 60s Robin?
I watched it.
Oh, God.
After you told me about it. Fucking hilarious.
Yeah.
It's The Dark Knight fighting Bane. And like, you're going down and, oh, Batman, blah, blah, blah. And then, like, 60s Robin comes in, like, gee willikers. Yeah. It's fucking amazing.
Holy inexplicable.
Yeah. They did it. They did. Just like Burt Ward fucking Robin. And it was really well done. Fucking hilarious.
Wow. I always wondered about Batman, that did he really care about anything outside of Gotham City?
No.
Just he could see something, like, in the New Jersey or the Brooklyn of Gotham City, and he's just like, I wish I could do something.
Yeah, he didn't cross the river.
He's basically a sociopath. I mean, Batman is a sociopath, right? I mean, he has no...
Yes.
I know that they've... I know that over the... Well, really, he was a detective and then a sociopath.
That's right. That happens.
But it's a character that, you know, clearly, like... You know, when they pitched Dexter, they were like, well, it's Batman, but he's just a guy, you know?
Well, I find it interesting, and this was in a comic once where they pointed out that first it wasn't like there was the Joker, Penguin, Riddler, Two-Face all running around, and Batman then showed up. Batman shows up first, and then suddenly all these homicidal maniacs and murderers and, you know, supervillains show up.
Right.
So he's actually like this weird catalyst for... Gotham might have been bad.
He gives them gusto.
But once he showed up, it got a lot worse.
We're like, hey, I guess we should be wearing masks too.
Exactly.
I think they bring that up in Batman Begins. He's like, you change things. People are starting to...
That was The Dark Knight, the Heath Ledger in The Dark Knight. He does say that. The Joker. He's like, thanks to you.
I think even Commissioner Gordon says that at the end of Batman Begins.
Oh, that's right. Oh, that's yeah. Commissioner Gordon, what does he know?
So
mustaches.
Yeah.
I love, but that's a pretty cool story for a 15-year-old.
Well, the best part was I sent it into DC and got a form letter back, as you do, but I didn't tell him how old I was, but the form letter had a handwritten little note from the editor-in-chief that said, this was pretty good, but we're not going to buy a Batman story from you because we got guys who write Batman for us, like Frank Miller.
Yeah.
You know? But he said, but maybe you should pitch an original series idea. And I was like, oh, no.
Oh, wow. Okay. You could have been a Wonderkin.
Well, I wasn't, though, and I knew that.
All right. So. There's a series of grave robbings and original character Frogman has to try to track down.
I wasn't even that smart. I was just very freaked out. I was like happy to get the note of encouragement. And this is like a famous editor at DC in the 80s. But I was like, no way. I'm going to go back to... Then I started doing like small press, black and white stuff. And I knew better. I didn't want to be... Because there are guys who broke in when they were teenagers.
Right.
And it did not end up well for them, I don't think. You know? Because you get... You just got to live a life first, I think.
Right. Yeah. You know? Would you recommend now that someone... go the indie route or self-publish or try to get a job at one of the big companies to learn? I mean, or is it?
No. I mean, with the internet, I mean, you can just make comics and put them up on your webpage or whatever. And so that's the most important thing, is just to make comics.
But is there any benefit to learning? I mean, a lot of times, you know, I see creative people and they go, man, the system, fuck the system. And it's like, yeah, but sometimes... the system can be beneficial in the sense that it trains you. Like, if you can function within the system and roadblocks and having to figure out how to get around stuff, sometimes that does force you to be a little more creative.
Right.
So that when you do go out on your own, you kind of understand, you know.
Yeah. And we, Man of Action guys, we cut our teeth on those big company franchises. I mean, we went through the system first. And, you know, it was sort of like a... It was like a two-way street. We exploited each other. They got our labor, and we got the heat that you get from working on a recognizable property.
Right.
You know? So we used each other in the most healthy way, I think. But now, I mean, I don't know if I would consider... I probably wouldn't consider, since I've already done it. I don't know if I would go back and write Superman as a regular, you know, gig.
Yeah.
Because I've done it, and also... I did it already, so I wouldn't have to do it again. I kind of did. It's kind of like putting in your time in the salt mines.
Yeah.
And then I sort of moved out so that now when I do a creator-owned book at Image, I have enough of a name that it gets a fair shot in the marketplace.
Sure.
That's what I worked for all along. That's what everybody, I think our generation, you know, of creative people put in our time in sort of the corporate environments where the opportunities became available to us. As much as we could, you did it. We all do it. So you can then strike out. And even if you kind of have to start at the bottom again, you have some knowledge. You have a bit of a brand.
Yeah, which, I've been there.
You know, yeah, exactly. And then you build it back up again.
Yeah.
But you're creating your own space to exist in. And that, I mean, that's a huge deal. You know, I mean, I think the next generation after us, I think, will learn those lessons and think, you know, I don't have to go and work for Marvel or DC in the case of comics. I can make my own comic and get it out there and build my brand. And you should start when you're young and don't have any real responsibilities, because that's when you are supposed to be an artist.
Right.
And just purely creative. And then you kind of, hopefully you go through the mill and don't get chewed up and spit out too bad. Like, you can get back to being an artist again.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, you've seen, this thing that Seinfeld's doing, this conversations with comedians.
With comedians.
Coffee
yeah.
and cars.
Or yeah, I mean, that's just his pure creative instinct to do something. I mean,
I think that's like his podcast.
It is. Yeah. It totally is. It totally is. And you know, he's not, you know, he's giving it out for free. Anybody can see it. He's gone through the process of, you know, if you want to call it selling out, he sold out big time, cashed in huge. And now he just does things, it seems like, from a purely creative place.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, so, he doesn't have to do stand-up, but he still continues.
He doesn't have to do anything.
He
can sit on his ass and do nothing. But when he does something, you can tell it's just because he wants to do it. You know,
I always, you know, I look at it, just sort of making a parallel. I look at a show like The Simpsons, and it's just sort of the South Park joke. Like, a Simpsons already did it, and even within their own universe, like, we have fucking done everything,
right?
You know, but then you look at a character like Superman, or you look at the X-Men, and you go, what the fuck can I do with these characters that haven't been, like, so when you kind of get to that place, you know, just some advice for young writers, is it, do you think concept, or you go, no, now I just have to write, you know, like, human experience stories that are very specific? Like, where does your brain go to try to carve new pathways, you know, when you were up against that kind of thing?
You mean when you're writing like a company character?
When you're writing a company character that's like, there's a ton of canon, and even though it's like, you know, it's splintered, and well, there's this version of this and this series of this. I mean, like, there's still some generally recognized consistencies.
Well, I'll give you an example of what I did. I wrote Superman for about 3.5 years. And I was just kind of writing Superman. But then in my last year, I knew it was going to be my last year on the book. And I thought, well, what can I do? What have I not done? And luckily, comics were sort of out of the phase of doing these big crossover events where if you're on a monthly book, your book would kind of get hijacked every year for about 3 months. We have to tie into this bigger story.
Yeah.
Well, they weren't doing those at the time. This was about 2003, 2004. So I had a year free and clear on Superman where I could kind of do what I wanted. I didn't have to telegraph any big overall DC events. So I thought, all right, I'm going to do a year of Superman stories where he doesn't throw a punch.
Oh, wow.
And that he would use his powers in like more creative ways. And I actually kind of laid it on thick and had him, and he says it in one of the issues where he says to another character, I'm a pacifist. Because everybody kind of, the default of Superman is like, oh, he can punch anybody out because he's the big strongest one there is. And so I kind of thought, well, if you're the strongest one there is, why, you don't have to punch anybody out. You can kind of use other abilities that you have to solve problems. And of course, you got to write the stories so that you're not writing yourself into a corner necessarily, where the only way out is to punch the big monster.
What if you didn't blow up Metropolis?
Exactly.
Oh, good point, Superman. So stuff like that.
Yeah, pound my fist.
I'm glad you did that little faux stentorian thing that you did, because I think, is this like that's like a Nerdist drinking game, I think.
What?
Well, the default of like going into that, hello.
That's very presentational.
Exactly.
I have a couple of, you know, as you know, if you listen to the podcast, I have a couple of default voices. One of them is the Southern guy. I can't help it. I grew up in the South.
Gravelly New York guy.
This guy, over here. Yep. These are not very original characters, P.S., as you know. And then one of them is the very presentational guy, which is, I am performing
British.
Now.
Yes, I am
theatrical.
Also
have British. You also have your default, anyone in the service industry is Mexican.
Well, I didn't say that.
No, that's your default voice.
You
didn't say it.
No, I am way on board with all of them except for that one, Matt Myra. I have definitely not ever defaulted to that. You're just trying to get people mad at me.
No, I'm not.
Yeah.
And then you always will say, I'm not doing a voice. It's just that he was Mexican.
No, there was one time where I went to a restaurant in Los Angeles. The guy had never heard of cottage cheese. He was specifically Latino. Very specifically Latino. And he was like, you mean like feta? And I'm like, no, cottage cheese. I realized I didn't know. The point of that story was I did not know how to explain cottage cheese to someone other than just the words, cottage cheese.
It looks like it's gone bad.
But I was not using his voice as representative of every server in Los Angeles. That was just that specific guy.
Well, that story sticks out in my mind.
Who
has a very good voice.
You are making that bigger.
It is strange that you would actually try to affect the accent and just in telling a story about cottage cheese.
I can't,
it's a storyteller.
I it's just a comic gene thing. It's like, if I'm telling a story, it's very illustrative to then, you know, and to then go into whatever the, you know, if that guy had been French, I would have said, you mean like feta cheese?
Whoa, Chris, come on, man.
What?
Just stop being offensive.
What, man?
So he just talks like that because he's French.
Hey, man, those Frenchies are coming here taking jobs out of our...
Fucking frogs, man.
They're taking...
Maitre d' jobs.
They took our jobs.
They took our jobs.
Oh, my Lord.
Yeah. So that is a lot of back explanation.
I like it. I do think it is the Nerdist drinking game.
Jonah is the Nerdist drinking game. So what is next for Man of Action Studios? What are you guys up to next?
We're sort of in the belly of the beast over at Marvel doing the producing Ultimate Spider-Man,
yep,
cartoon show, which seems to be doing okay. There'll be more work for Marvel coming up, which I guess we can't say yet. I'm doing a cartoon now over at MTV for Liquid TV with Mosier, nice, called Disco Destroyer.
Nice. So glad they're bringing that back.
Yeah.
Well, yes, they're
sort of bringing it back.
Yeah.
It's been taking a long time.
I had to put a halt on a real good sort of anti-man joke I was going to say, but I'm doing something for them, so I can't sit there and go, yeah.
And then another thing.
Exactly.
Hey guys, it's Joe. I just wanted you to know. Oh, there's this character too. Yeah, it's this character too. It's the apologetic, like, oh, let's all be. I mean, clearly, you know, I was just doing a comedy bit on a comedy. All right.
Come on, guys. Don't drive a Jaguar. Don't drive a Jaguar.
I have to get better about not like throwing gasoline on my own gigs.
It's hard not to sometimes, but God, those fucking. Oh, those early Liquid televisions, you know, Dog Boy, Frog Baseball, Aeon Flux, fucking.
But that's what I'm saying. I mean, if you want to really dig into Mike Judge's history with MTV, maybe probably not so good.
Did you hear that Terry Crews was being interviewed, and he says that him and Mike Judge just talked to Fox about doing some President Camacho stuff? Like start doing web stuff and then maybe develop it into another movie.
Oh, wow.
Which I would fucking love because I love President Camacho.
Are you ever going to get into, do you want to do films as well? Or is that a different business model?
Well, it's kind of hopefully the next step, you know. It's kind of weird. I mean, once you're sort of in show business, you're just kind of in it, you know. There's no ladder anymore. That's the thing. I mean, it's just like, okay, maybe we'll do this now. Or maybe, especially when you have something like a sort of like a Ben 10 that did kind of work out.
Right. Or like a Jaguar.
Exactly. That's right. When you're driving that Jaguar, you're feeling no pressure at all.
I'm taking that car back. I'm just going to leave it on the fucking doorstep and be like, please take this back.
Have you ever heard Jerry Seinfeld apologize for his Porsches?
No,
exactly. So don't worry about it.
Don't worry about it.
I think that's an act.
But is his
joke and Jerry Seinfeld?
You know, his everyman jokes change a little bit.
You just compared Chris and Jerry Seinfeld.
I did.
Have you ever noticed how the dashboard on your Jaguar gets hot when you're like, no?
What was that?
I was veering into something else.
What?
This Jaguar?
Hey, what is this critique today of my mini performances?
Turning into Gleason.
What is this? What are you, America's Got Talent? Bored?
Joe's been sent in to fuck up the podcast.
I get it. They're bad voices.
Yeah. First, it starts off with the water that causes a rift between the three of us. He's just trying to take this down.
You son of a bitch.
He's trying to get storylines for his comic books.
Isn't this always how it goes on this podcast?
I don't know.
No. What happens on this podcast is I quietly poke Matt and Jonah and then just throw them together like two ferrets in a canvas bag.
I see. Okay.
He pokes us a lot, Joe.
Jonah.
Well,
stop it, Jonah.
I'm sorry.
Let's not talk too much about your poking.
Not in front of company. Told you not in front of company. Here's a note. Get us out of here. You don't speak the note. You're supposed to just hand him the note.
We want to leave.
There's no point in writing a note if you're going to tell him what the note says.
I am so sorry. I think he knows about the note.
Talk about Memphis again.
Oh, sorry. What about the Memphis Tigers?
tell him Memphis. That was the Memphis State Tigers.
That's pretty good.
Oh, yeah? I'm really good at
would you please
which city
tell Chris
what their animal would be.
You went from Jaguars to Tigers.
No. It could have been anything.
Tell Chris that most people don't know anything about Memphis.
I was interested
in it. And he's alienated a lot of the audience.
It was neat to hear.
Please let him know he's alienated a lot
if
of the audience.
If all the Memphis stuff gets cut out of this, I'll be disappointed.
With automobile and regional reference talk.
Yeah.
It's all been ruined.
This is one of our best episodes.
I like the Oxnard when we all laughed really hard. Oxnard, right. I'm just gonna make no sense. Oxnard, yeah, all right, good choice.
Yeah.
I'm going deeper than when I drive my Jaguar down Airways, I turn on Poplar and then get over to Union.
Well, if you need, if you're Kevin and Bean, by the way.
If you need the Oxnard comparison, it's like living in downtown Memphis and having a job in Little Rock.
I don't get it.
No. What was the now? I want. I. What was? Where was the military base that was adjacent to Memphis? It was north of Memphis. It was called
Memphis adjacent.
No, it was like not Middleton. That's horrible.
Centerton.
You know what I'm talking about.
I know the military base, but I can't remember the name of it.
Yeah.
Fuck. We've you know, the bummer part about moving away from Memphis before I was old enough to drive was that I have a basic concept of the areas of Memphis, but because I was a kid and I was driven everywhere, I wasn't really paying attention. So, you know, like I know Poplar and I know Highland and I know Midtown a little bit and I know that the I-40 connects
Quince and White Station.
You know, I know the 40 connects a lot of stuff and, you know, but... And then the 240.
Is that why you hire a driver every time you go back?
Okay, I don't hire a driver. I do not hire a driver in Memphis, Matt Meyer.
Do you hire some Mexican kids to push you around on a rickshaw?
The look on your face right now, where you're just, you know you're being a naughty kid. I can see the look on your face. You know you're being bad.
Rickshaw.
You're like, you are.
I can guarantee there are no rickshaws in Memphis.
The casinos.
There's a really good guitarist named Rick Shaw, though. He's really good.
You've changed since I got my Jaguar.
I don't know what it is about all my friends. They're so different now.
Oh, my God. You know, you get more expensive friends, and this is the kind of shit that... It's the kind of shit that happens.
Yeah, you've got to trade up, I think. It's time.
Right?
When these guys can't deal with your Jaguar, it's time to trade up.
I need Fancy Matt and Snazzy Jonah coming here in a top hat.
I got a haircut. My hair's short now.
Your hair is shorter. You got a little birthday haircut.
I got a birthday haircut. I freaked out. I was like, I'm turning 30. I got to grow up. And then I just cut my hair short. It's the only difference I've made.
Happy birthday, by the way. Happy belated birthday.
Wow, how old are you?
I'm 30.
You turned 30.
Well, I mean, mine was more recent, but thank you.
Matt turned 29. A day and a half, 2 days after Jonah.
Wow. Yeah, everyone kind of got overshadowed a bit because my birthday. No one really paid attention to yours.
You guys are young.
Because Matt went to Boston and he didn't throw a party here.
I left. And then, like, Emily was like, it's your birthday? Why didn't you say anything? And I'm like, it's not. Why do I have to say things about my birthday?
Would you just say a few words about your birthday?
You would have told things about your birthday if you were in town and you wanted to hang out.
I'm sure I would have had some sort of gathering, but I was leaving and no one needs to know it's my birthday.
You guys are still young enough to feel like change, you have time to get your shit together.
Yeah. No. I've since I was 23, I felt like I'm too late. I'm like, well, I fucked up. I didn't break a big. I guess I'm fucked. Imagine living now from that point another 6 years of just feeling fucked.
Oh, I'm going to get my
every
shit
day.
Wow.
Yeah.
You're going to do what?
Get my shit together.
It's good.
This year.
This is the year you get your shit together?
I want to line it up for when I'm 30.
You got to get your shit together like Joe Casey.
I'm going to get my shit together in about 5 years. That's my plan.
What I'm going to do is buy a 2005 Saturn L300.
Well, I know a guy.
It's going to be happening.
You can have mine.
Oh, my God. Thank you.
I got a sledgehammer.
Does your air conditioning work?
It does.
I'll take it.
It does. Sort of. It works. You got to roll the window down, too, just to get the maximum
effect. Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
Is your website Man of Action Studios?
Manofaction.tv.
Manofaction.tv.
Ooh.
Yeah. So I was really wrong.
Tavula.
I know. We got
to. It keeps that island going. Their domain business.
Because of it, yeah.
They're domain
Someone,
farmers.
Someone, not me, thought it would be clever. Like, maybe we'll be in TV someday. So
right.
Let's have .tv. I thought, no one else has .tv. So.
But it works because you got TV shows on
I guess
internet.
It does. It's funny. The internet for us is so non-existent. We have like a website, but I don't look at it. I don't think anybody looks at it. It's not necessarily a destination site for anything important.
Yeah, us too.
But we always try to get up ahead of steam of like, all right, we're gonna make the website cool. And then, you know, another TV gig comes up and we're like, oh, I guess we better... Do that job for money.
Ugh. And they're like, we're going to do this thing. And then
I need to take a drink.
And then a southern guy's like, everybody come over here.
Another drink for that.
And then a little kid's like, cheekless. And then
there it is. I haven't heard that in forever.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. I know. Maybe we should have more of a web thing going on, but you know, we don't.
It sounds like a really out of touch like agent. You guys need to get more of a web thing going on.
You got to get those viral hits, man.
I know.
You need to make some viral videos. Yeah.
I know. I actually feel like maybe I'll be on, you know, on the bandwagon for the next thing that comes along. That's cool. You know?
Quantum computing.
Yes.
You know, every time I sit in a meeting and someone says, you know, our company's going to get more into viral videos. Well, you've just proven that you're not.
Our record label needs to start making hit songs. Where are all the hit songs?
We're going to be in the hit song business. We want to be in the platinum record business.
There was a Onion News video of like a report on... like the boss at some company, like beating up his employees because they're not making enough viral videos. We need more online videos. They need to go viral. He's like cutting his body open.
Oh my!
And he like
God.
Chokes out a girl and he sees someone's filming. He's like, put this online.
What is
make sure this goes viral?
Just out of curiosity, just as an industry comparison, what is considered a successful comic book? How many units before they go, that was a hit?
Oh, the top selling comics will sell 110, 120, 130,000 a month, which is pretty good. I mean, if you're like a fiction author, you put a book out every 2 years, but you're not in the sort of like the Stephen King, John Grisham, you know, whatever category.
Yeah.
You would kill for those numbers.
Oh, yeah. I think the book numbers are, I don't even know what my book did, but I remember before it went out, they were like, you know, if you sell 15,000 or 20,000 copies, that's a hit.
Yeah.
Like, wow, really? So it's that those are pretty amazing numbers.
Those are low numbers for comics.
Right.
And at Marvel and DC, those are like, cancel that book.
Right.
Jeez, it sells really? 15,000. Yeah. Well, because it's not cost effective at that point. It's not, you know, it's not worth it for what you pay for the writers and the artists and things like that, you know, because their page rates have risen. Just as almost just cost of living raises, but because, you know, paper costs and all that kind of stuff, it becomes a money losing game, you know. And Marvel and DC, they have huge overhead too, so sure. Their cancellation thresholds are a lot higher than say an Image comic or even a Dark Horse comic threshold. Which is to say that I do a lot of books through Image Comics that I own, and I don't make any money off of them.
Passion projects?
Yeah, I just do them for the pure love of the game, you know? Because, as I said before, I have that freedom to sort of like, if I can come up with the weirdest shit, which most of my shit is very weird. I mean, Kirkman still, when he puts out comics, it's still a stab at a commercial idea. When I do comics, it's like, what thought did I have when I was taking a shit today? I'll make a comic of that.
You know? Are these like one-offs or do you try to make these into series?
Some of them are series. Some of them are one-offs. I'll do, you know, just sort of one-shot graphic novels or I'll do miniseries. I mean, whatever, literally whatever I feel like doing, you know?
Yeah.
And that's what I earned through working for years at Marvel and DC. That's kind of where I got with my name in the business, which is not huge. I mean, none of the guys in Man of Action are not huge comic book names by any stretch. I mean, we've kind of had our successes here and there just from the fact of working on those big franchises. But we're not on the level of like, you know, Grant Morrison or even Kirkman, you know. But we have enough juice to be able to kind of do the things that we want to do as long as we sort of eke out just enough to make it worth like Image's while. You know,
right?
It's not. We're not. They're not complete embarrassments.
No, but that's enough of a reason to, you know, like when you sort of look at your life and you go, okay, I think I just would like to be happy.
Yeah.
And as long as I can, you know, make enough doing this thing and I like doing it, then I don't really know what else. What else do you really need to do?
Well,
you
you've know? Got two options of longevity in when you write comics for a living or just when you do it long enough. Is you can look on your bookshelf and say, hey, there's all these collections of like my run on Superman, on the X-Men, on Batman, on Captain America, whatever. You could have a whole shelf full of, or you could have a shelf full of shit that you own. It's your library. You own those IPs completely. I mean, Image Comics is the only company that where they take no piece of the media rights at all.
Wow.
You own it all. I mean, Image makes nothing off Kirkman's show.
Mm-hmm.
They make they make money off of the fact that the graphic novels have totally exploded.
Mm-hmm.
But those were kind of already a success even before the show.
Right.
But to be able to go someplace and go, you know, will you publish my sort of weird idea and let me own it? And they say yes, you know, that's as good as it gets, really. I mean, it's a tantamount to Seinfeld probably went to, what's his thing on crackle.com or whatever. He just went to Crackle and said, I'm going to do this thing. And Crackle said, yes, okay, please do that.
Go do it.
Yeah.
It's a good looking show too.
Yeah. That freedom is awesome. I mean, that's everything you work for. So much so that I made like a little, really low, I took some of my first Ben 10 money and I made a feature film. Just because I thought, oh, this would be fun, you know. And it was fine, and it came out on DVD, but it was literally, I wrote the script, we shot the script, I edited it, I did all the stuff on it, and I knew that I may go on to make other films, but it probably will never be as free as it was doing that totally low-budget film, because there was no studio, there was nothing, nobody telling me what to do, or there were no notes or anything like that. So in a way, sort of, the trap is the more successful you get, and you know this, the more successful you get, the more bullshit you have to put up with. So
sometimes,
well, you have to be really strong-willed to fight through that stuff.
But I feel like the bigger you get doing your own thing, then when people bring you on to something, they kind of know what they're getting. And then, you know, like, and you can say to them, this is what I do, you know, yeah, like, but if you don't want it, don't hire me.
But oftentimes you do have to educate them that it is what you do. You kind of have to remind them, look, you want me because of what I did.
Yeah.
And now you got to get in there early, and if you start getting that feedback where you think, oh, they don't understand what I did.
I feel like I had to deal with way more shit in the beginning of my career. Now I just kind of go like, well, this is, you know, this is what I want to do. And for people who know who I am, I think that this they would get this thing. And then they're like, okay, like I feel like I have to deal with a lot less shit that way now.
But don't you think that's partially your own attitude about, I mean, once you've kind of been through it a few times,
maybe
you relax a little bit and you go, if this doesn't work out, there'll be the next.
Yeah,
thing.
Exactly. It's making decisions without, it's making non-fear-based decisions.
You don't have the stink of desperation.
No. And also because you know that, when you do, I mean, also, I pick my battles and I don't, you know, like, I don't obsess over every little thing. And, you know, like, if someone comes back and goes, well, I really think it should be this, I really think hard about it and go, well, am I going to come back with an ego decision? Or is this really something that I don't really care that much about? And a lot of times I'll just go, yeah, that's fine. You know, everyone should be happy with it. I don't mind, you know, compromising over here. But if it's something that I really, really, really believe in, then I'll go, no, it really kind of has to be this way, and that's just it. And then, without being mean or rude or whatever, and you know, most of the time they'll go, okay, you know, if you feel like it has to be that way,
it's actually a good feeling to sort of concede the field every once in a while, because you know that you're doing it because you don't care that much about it.
Well, but I also feel like, I mean, I still feel like I don't fucking know everything. So, you know, like maybe this idea I have isn't that great. And if I don't feel that strongly about it and someone has a different idea, then that's fine. You know, we'll do that. Like I genuinely like being collaborative about stuff and I like people bringing their ideas, and I just don't really, I don't know. But I also know that if I do something that I feel like, yeah, I really don't want to do that, I'm very resistant to that, because you ultimately do have to live with the stuff that you make.
Right.
And if you compromise something that you really, really, really do believe in, and then it doesn't go well, then you're twice as mad.
Yeah.
You're like, fuck, I knew I should have done that, and I did it, and it fucking bit me in the face. But
you got to bet on yourself when it counts.
Well, you just have to. I just think getting comfortable enough with your craft to make non-fear-based decisions is a wonderful place to be. Because it just frees you up. And you're like, okay, well, then don't hire me. I don't care. You can have what I do or don't.
Yeah.
It's your choice.
And you know, fear is their greatest weapon.
It really is their greatest weapon against you. And if you don't, you know, if you politely don't care about that part of it, you know, I've had friends who worked in the business, and the people will approach them. They're like, are you okay as far as money? Like, just trying to find out what their weaknesses are. And they're like, yeah, I'm fine. They're like, drat.
Yeah.
We're almost at the end of our... We're actually kind of at the end of our time here, and Jonah's got to get to the Meltdown show.
All right.
But Joe, it was really great to have you on.
Yeah, thanks.
Manofaction.tv, and watch...
And I am not on Twitter. I want to state that
for right.
record.
I'm not on Twitter. There, I got to do the voice. And in conclusion, I am sorry that I got a Jaguar. I'm a fucking douchebag, and I look forward to your hatred comments.
Fear is what drives
a piece of shit. Of Jaguar you got.
What?
It could be the base model.
It's not, but I'm sorry about it anyway. And I apologize profusely.
Chris, are those
bag.
Plated gold keys?
Jonah,
that's weird.
Jonah, you're just shaking your own keys right now.
No, come on,
it's
not even mine.
Magic of
also,
radio.
Also, you're assuming
this
a Jaguar
radio.
Doesn't operate on a fob when he just gets in his car.
It operates
start
on
button.
A key fob.
Anyway, I gotta go. See you guys later.
What? Wow, Chris has 550 of those.
I hate myself.
Wow.
Enjoy your Jaguar, everyone.
Chris, you did it again.
What?
You said Jaguar instead of burrito.
Jaguar, don't you have to get to your show at Melt Jaguar? Thank you, Jaguar Casey, for being here. Man of Jaguar Studios.
Jaguar, 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 Jaguar.
Now leaving Nerdist.com. Enjoy your burrito.
1, 2, 3, 4. Those are numbers. But you already knew that. If you want to know what number you're going to pay each month for your car, use Kelley Blue Book My Wallet on AutoTrader. They're really good at numbers. AutoTrader.